You're listening to the WYXR Archived, powered by listeners like you. Donate online today at WYXR.org.
Welcome once again to the Thacker Mountain Radio Hour. We're coming to you tonight from the Powerhouse Arts Center in Oxford, Mississippi. Thank you. Welcome to the Thacker Mountain Radio Hour. As I mentioned, we're at the Powerhouse Arts Center right here just off the square in Oxford, Mississippi. Fine evening, fine crowd tonight. Our author tonight is Jared Sullivan. He's written a book called Valley So Low, One Lawyer's Fight for Justice in the Wake of America's Great Coal Catastrophe. It is quite a story. Can't wait to talk to him. Tania Sanders is here, a fine songwriter from Jackson and New Orleans, Louisiana. She's been with us before. She has actually executive produced her first film since we've seen her last, and also put out a video, a song. It is called Our Rebellious Hearts. We'll be hearing from her, Tania. And then to take us home tonight, a Blues Hall of Famer, y'all, John Primer and the Real Deal Blues Band, and they are aptly named, let me tell you. But we've got a real deal right here. Y'all please welcome our house band, the Yellow Bushwhackers, boys.
Just blues, these are the miners' blues. Well, some blues are just blues, these are the miners' blues. My troubles, they come in threes and by two. I'm in more blues. That's a cold black blue. These are old miner blues.
Yellow Bushwhacker Show, one more time for them. Ricky Burkhead, Slade Lewis, Keon Love, and Paul Tate. Our house band, the Yellow Bushwhackers. They'll be back later in the show. Our first guest is Tania Sanders. She was telling me she just got back from traveling the world, touring the world, playing music. Where was that last country you mentioned that Barat was from?
Kazakhstan.
Kazakhstan.
Yes. Wow. That's what most people remember as Borat from the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And for some reason, it just sounds like the food wouldn't be so great there. And no offense, but it's not that great.
No comment.
Yeah. But Tania lives in New Orleans, Louisiana, so the food's not any good anywhere when she goes. You know what I mean? What are you going to do? But Our Rebellious Hearts is her latest single. It's also a film she executive produced. It highlights three young black artists who grew up playing their music in the church. And for the single, she enlisted our old buddy from the MPB days, Rita Brent. Y'all know, may know Rita. She's a very funny comedian who is also on this song. I listened to it this afternoon. It's very catchy. I'm going to put it in my rotation right in there with my Conway Twitty and my Lynyrd Skynyrd. Y'all, please welcome Tania Sanders.
Hey, y'all. Happy to be back in Mississippi. I'm from Jackson originally, and so Mississippi is always home to me, and I'm just grateful to be here at Thacker Mountain. And I'm going to play some original songs for y'all. This one's called Beautiful Mess. Anybody in here been in a relationship and it starts out and you're like, oh my God, we're so in love. We're never going to break up. And then you break up and you realize it was a hot mess the whole time. And you just had love beer goggles on. That's what this song is about. I see you nodding in the back. Yeah, she's like, I've been there. But I like to phrase it as a positive and say, at least it was a beautiful mess. Here's my story long, but it's true. I went on to love you, even when the love was gone. Everybody knows I was such a fool to love you. I don't know where we're wrong. There may be colors in the back, but ain't nobody coloring in this old shack, 'cause it time stands still. Matter of fact, I knew it would. There may be flowers on the kitchen floor. Don't have your love no more. See, there comes a time when the things that blind you become so clear. We were a beautiful mess. Ooh, beautiful mess. Ooh, baby, it's the good times and the hard times. Other times a beautiful mess. Take it back a little bit. Hey! You know your love is what I miss, but it got so hard and it got so tough. Baby, what went wrong? See, when times got rough, you know I was there. Yeah. Praying my a beautiful mess. Ooh, baby, it's the good times and the hard times. Other times a beautiful mess. Well, take me to the bridge. Baby, baby, tell me what went wrong. What went wrong? I tried so hard to make it. Tell me what went wrong. What went wrong? Oh, tried so hard to make it. y'all so much. Ah, feels good to be home. I like the smell of the weather when I get off the plane coming home to Mississippi. And my cute little grandma has been cooking for me the whole time I've been home, so I love that I get to eat greens and cornbread almost every day. And, you know, I wrote this next song. It's called Finite. And as songwriters, usually we write love songs about other people. We're like, I feel like I give them the stars and the moon and all of that. And I said, I need to write a song for myself. And so this is my love song for myself. Instead of giving all that love to somebody else, as RuPaul says, if you can't love yourself, how are you gonna love somebody else? Can I get an amen? Amen. So I'm loving myself first. And this is my song to myself. It's called Finite. I love your beat, I love your rhythm, sing, you know I love you well. I love your shine, your glow, that surprises life and wishing wells. I love your queen, I love the joy you weave, the tears that show you care. You're like a breeze in the middle of a sunrise. Thank you. Somebody likes a self-love song. All right. I always like this song. It's called Preacher Man. I grew up singing in church with my whole family. And my dad just happens to be a preacher man. And I wrote this song when I left Mississippi for the first time. And I had a hard time adjusting. I moved to Indiana and then I moved to Kentucky. And I had this other preacher along the way that helped me reframe my mindset around the struggle I was going through. And I had a praying dad. So this is for all the preachers that helped me through. And I hope y'all enjoy this.
Left my home in Mississippi. Took so long before I found my way. I was lost in frail. I know my heart has seen better days. So I keep pushing on by faith. So when you see these eyes, oh, you see these eyes, my story, they're live. Send me a preacher, man.
Tania Sanders, y'all. Let her hear you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Welcome home.
Thank you.
So great. Our Rebellious Hearts is her new single and film, also the single Point of View. And some of you may remember the film Morgan Freeman did, Prom Night in Mississippi. You have a song in that film.
I do. I have one called Stan. It's at the very end. So if you watch it, watch for the very end credits in my song. Stan plays for like 2 minutes and 30 seconds to be accurate. But yeah.
So wonderful. One more time for Tania Sanders, y'all.
Thank you, Tania. Thank you for being here.
It sounded so great. So great. We'd like to remind you that you're listening to the Thacker Mountain Radio Hour. You're hearing us on WUMS, the University of Mississippi. Also on WYXR, Memphis, Tennessee. WUTC, Community Radio in Chattanooga, Tennessee. The stations of Mississippi Public Broadcasting, our old pals. The stations of Alabama Public Radio. Also WUOT, Community Radio in Knoxville, Tennessee. And KNCE, True Taos Radio in Taos, New Mexico. Yeah, we appreciate them. Also, you can hear the show on Spotify, SoundCloud, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, After the Fact, so wherever you like to listen to your music and your info and your literature. Also, like to thank this week's Green Room sponsor, Rosati's Pizza. We appreciate them. Also, the good folks at Red Panther Brewing Company, Cathead Distillery, Wonderbird Spirits, Southside Art Gallery, Carol Etheridge Family Foundation, Larry and Michael Johnson Family Foundation, Dr. Stephen and Gay Case, Freeland Drum Lab, Mississippi Arts Commission, the good folks at Visit Mississippi and Visit Oxford, Square Books, ladies and gentlemen, the mothership. We appreciate Square Books. A member of the family, of course, Yottabatava Arts Council, Delta Magazine, the Mississippi Business Journal, Mississippi Hills Heritage Area Alliance, and Snooki and Mary Lou Williams Foundation of Water Valley, Mississippi. The legend continues. You too can be a Thacker backer and keep our party going. More information at thackermountain.org. Keon Love, y'all. How about him? Just right. Thank you, Keon. All righty. Our next guest is author Jared Sullivan. Man, he put some time and research and interviewing into this book, and it keeps you turning the pages. It gets you in the heart and in the gut and in the head. It is called Valley So Low, One Lawyer's Fight for Justice in the Wake of America's Great Coal Catastrophe. It is from Knopf Books, always a great house to be with. Y'all please welcome Jared Sullivan.
Hey, glad to be here. Thanks for having me, Jim.
Yes. Now, to refresh us, and I'm sure you have to do this everywhere you go, this was a huge catastrophe, but we've been so much info and data swarms our lives these days. Remind us of what we're talking about here.
Yes. So my book, Valley So Low, it's about the 2008 Kingston coal ash disaster. It was, the largest industrial disaster in U.S. history at a power plant operated by the Tennessee Valley Authority. So I think just to tee up our conversation, I'll just read a few paragraphs, if that's all right, just to describe the disaster. So again, this is December 22nd, 2008. As the clock approached midnight, a stiff wind blew over the rolling countryside that surrounded the Kingston fossil plant. It was the winter solstice, and in the quiet of that long night, the old farmhouses, country churches, trailer homes, and lakeside estates that dotted the hills and coves around the power station were dark and still. Christmas trees glowed in living rooms. The year without a Santa Claus played on TVs. Outside, the temperature hovered around 14 degrees Fahrenheit, cold enough to freeze the pipes at the McDonald's in town. Then, shortly before 1 o'clock, the north section of the coal ash dike suddenly and almost wholly collapsed. When it did, more than a billion gallons of coal ash slurry, about 1,500 times the volume of liquid that flows over Niagara Falls each second, broke forth. A black wave at least 50 feet high rushed northward with the power and violence of water punching through a dam. A backwater inlet separated the coal ash pond from a peninsula along the Emory River. A few dozen homes sat along the water's edge. As the black wave roared ahead, shaking the earth, it overwhelmed the inlet and slammed into the peninsula. Most of the slurry, nearly 6 million tons in all, forked right around the obstruction and rushed into the Emory River, filling in a 40-foot deep channel. The rest of the ash, nearly 3 million tons, filled in two sloughs on either side of the peninsula, hurling fish 40 feet onto the riverbank. The wave kept going. It downed trees, covered roads, and knocked out power lines. Docks were inundated, boats were carried away, soccer fields were smothered. The wave first collided into the home of 53-year-old James Sheen. With a thundering boom, it ripped Sheen's vinyl-sided place off its foundation, upturning furniture, crushing door frames, and knocking over Christmas presents. The rafters cracked. I'll stop there, but it keeps going. This black wave, and it's coal ash, which is the toxic byproduct of burning coal to produce electricity. It's kind of like it's what's left over after you burn coal. Imagine if you had a charcoal grill, and afterwards the stuff that's kind of left in the bottom of the grill, it's like that. So this wave of a billion gallons of coal sludge rushes out and covers 300 acres in Kingston, Tennessee, which is about 40 minutes outside of Knoxville. And this happened in 2008, right before Christmas. So it was really uncovered or undercovered, in my view, by the news, because it was a scale of biblical proportions. And just I say it later in the book, but just wrap your mind around how like what is a billion gallons? Like how can you even like wrap your mind around how much stuff that is? I think the best way I've come to think about it is, if you've been in New York City and looked up at the if still on the sidewalk and looked up at the Empire State Building, the sludge could fill that structure four times over. So it's just an unholy amount of sludge that got poured out from this power plant. So
yeah, down in this part of the country, we're used to floods and hurricanes and black mold and that messy, you know, and mud. But this is something altogether. This is this black sludge, which is the trash from where the coal is being powered to power the plant. So they have this overflow, so they stash it in this, basically a hole in the ground.
It's called a pond, a coal ash pond, but this pond was 84 acres across and six stories tall. So I call it a mountain in the book, and I think that's accurate. And no one died immediately, because it was in the middle of the night, thank God, that this big mountain collapsed. So no one died from this disaster. 30 homes were destroyed or damaged, but fortunately no one died. But my book tells the story of these cleanup workers. So it's 2008, right? The economy is on its knees. The stock market and housing markets have just collapsed. So after this disaster, the morning after, Teamsters and other union reps start working the phones saying, we need blue-collar folks to come out here and help get this stuff out of the river and out off the landscape. So 900 men and women from across the country descend on Kingston, Tennessee to help clean this stuff up. And it's kind of a godsend for them, because when the economy collapsed in 2008, construction jobs, truck driving jobs, like all that stuff really dried up very, very fast. So these workers knew they're responding to a huge mess, but really they were very excited to come work because they really, really needed the job. So my book follows a handful of workers who get the call. I mean, my book opens with this one worker in particular, Ansel Clark. He gets the call at like 4 a.m. telling him to come to this job site. Well, TVA, and I grew up outside of Nashville in Franklin, Tennessee. So I remember when this happened. I was a senior in high school. I remember watching on TV, because the footage, you should look up on YouTube, it's remarkable. They have some helicopter footage you can find on YouTube, and it's just striking. But TVA, after this disaster happened, they got all their PR people in front of the cameras and basically said, this coal ash stuff is not hazardous, does not pose a serious threat to the community. And I remember, I remember hearing people myself, you know, TVA people saying that and thinking, gosh, what luck. That's so lucky that this huge disaster, but none of it's toxic. Well, you can probably see where this is going. It was very toxic. It was full of arsenic and beryllium and radium and just the worst sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. So my book follows these workers who rushed out there to clean up. They soon start getting sick. And then they call on this personal injury lawyer named Jim Scott from Knoxville. And
yeah, that's the thing. Once you get past the catastrophe of it and wrap your mind around this sludge, which you never really truly can, you do a great job of bringing the human element into it. You mentioned Ansel Clark, his wife, Janie. Ansel, just, we all know Ansel, salt of the earth guy, happens to be a guy who drives diesel trucks, likes to hunt and fish, a good country guy, very robust, very healthy when we first meet him. And of course, I latched on to him because you mentioned that he has a twin brother named Edsel, and I thought, okay, Ansel and Edsel, I'm liking that. But what really got me with Ansel was he had a pet turkey named Junior that he taught how to fish and ride a four-wheeler.
Not quite, but basically. Ansel found the egg, I think, while he was hunting. He's a big sportsman. And raised it under a heat lamp. And then when it hatched, it like kind of latched onto him. So it would sit on like a swing, like between him and his wife on like a backyard swing.
Raised him under a heat lamp.
It was like a hobby of his. So he was a very hardworking, well-meaning guy. He was not going to die rich, but he had made a good little, you know, career for himself driving trucks. And unfortunately, he goes out to this job site in TVA, and one of its chief safety officers, contractors at the site, Jacobs Engineering, basically tell him and these other workers who descend on the site, this stuff's not toxic. They don't provide them with dust masks or respirators. So their health starts to decline within a couple of years. And it goes from feeling drained of energy to to blacking out in their trucks, to nosebleeds, to worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. And now more than 50 of the workers have died. My book, these workers' stories are so depressing. It's so heartbreaking. As Jim was saying, I follow this lawyer named Jim Scott, who is, he's kind of a knucklehead. He reminds me of Huck Finn. Like, he means really well, but he's like also kind of a little bit of a mess and kind of like all over the place, you know, but he has like a good heart deep down. So Jim Scott, he worked in this low slung office building next to like a Burlington coat factory and a Chick-fil-A in Knoxville. It's not like a high powered corporate attorney, but he listened to these workers. They come to him. They say, we're sick. We've asked for dust masks and respirators. We haven't been given them. Will you help us? And Jim, much to his credit, does listen to them and spends the next decade of his life taking on the Tennessee Valley Authority and one of its contractors, Jacobs Engineering, in court. And it is a bear of a case. And that's kind of the narrative that drives my book forward.
That's what I told Jared. He did the impossible with this book. He made me feel sorry for lawyers. Jim Scott, obviously all these people are real people. Jim Scott's still with us. Kind of a messy guy, kind of unkempt, unruly hair. They all said he was sort of a mess. Not the sort of guy you would think would take on a corporate behemoth. He was also addicted to Skittles. You know, he's just one of those guys. And he, also, when I mentioned the sympathy for lawyers, I just didn't quite realize, your book really, really highlights this, that the small town lawyer, the single guy, solo guy working by himself with a shingle, when he has to fly in expert witnesses and take depositions with a court reporter there, he has to pay for all that out of his pocket. This Jim Scott worked on this huge, huge case for, 10 years before he saw a dime.
Yeah,
and you can go broke real quick doing that.
Yeah, and he nearly died. And he was taking on Tennessee Valley Authority, which I think TVA is has a very interesting history. It was created as part of the New Deal and was really a godsend. And for 25 years, it was the largest public works project, not just in the United States, in the entire world. And it was basically FDR, when he was a young man, he got polio and would drive through the Tennessee Valley to Warm Springs, Georgia to get treatment. And en route, saw how the Tennessee Valley, which is parts of seven states, this is south of Tennessee and parts of neighboring states, they had nothing. In 1933, the year of when he took office, the average person in the Tennessee Valley made the inflation-adjusted equivalent. He made $6,000 in today's money when adjusted for inflation. People had nothing. Malaria was endemic. Acres upon acres of farmland were eroded. People were hard up. But FDR had a brilliant idea to electrify the South by building all these hydroelectric dams. And soon incomes rose quickly. Industry came to the region. It also stopped a lot of flood. Like Chattanooga got washed away almost a couple of times. It stopped flooding. It was an amazing, amazing program. But as my book details, it has since unfortunately gone astray and has got hooked on coal and it couldn't get off of it. And it is no longer the shining emblem of good government.
No, shucks.
But I will say, we need TVA to be great, and I think it could be great again. And I am optimistic. I wrote a very critical book about TVA in hopes it could be reformed because we need it to produce abundant, clean energy, and it can do it. I believe so. So I go into great detail about my book.
You do a great job of presenting both sides. Anytime you make a claim, you also give TVA's side of it. I really applaud you for that, either in a footnote or an asterisk. They dispute a lot of your reporting, and you say all that in the book. I want to quickly get in here before we leave about Uniontown, Alabama. We know when these disasters happen, all that waste that they're pulling out of the river, all that ash, fly ash, that poisonous stuff, they load it up eventually on railroad cars, and they have to send it off somewhere to store it. Can't believe they didn't send it to Mississippi. That would be the usual thing. They sent it to Uniontown, Alabama, which just happens to be predominantly black.
It's one of the poorest.
And they store this stuff in their landfill. Tons of it, right?
Yeah, so they took this coal ash. They have to clean it out of the river in Tennessee to one of the poorest counties, one of the poorest states in the country, and and dump it there. And my book only kind of unfortunately glosses over what happened in Uniontown. Someone else, if another writer is listening, someone should write that book, because that's also a tragedy what happened there. And the state of Alabama did nothing for them.
You've done your research. You have incredible stats in here that don't seem like a bunch of stats, and you have wonderful factoids. For example, the Smoky Mountains are older than the rings of Saturn. Who knew?
It's true.
How do you find that out? Is that on the Google?
I just started looking up. A lot of Googling around, I guess. And how old are the Smoky Mountains? And what else is that old? And that's how you do it.
It is the word riveting is overdone, but it keeps you reading. You're rooting for these people. You're rooting for Jim Scott. You're rooting for great Ansel Clark and his turkey buddy. His turkey junior. They're fishing and they're riding four-wheelers, and he's a big strapping guy who gets sick, and he shouldn't have gotten sick. And I'm not going to say if he got justice or not. You got to read the book for that. Isn't that right, Jared?
That's right.
It's a great story and very well written. Jared Sullivan, y'all.
Thank you for having me. It's a treat. Absolute treat.
Thank you, man. Great job. Valley So Low, one lawyer's fight for justice in the wake of America's great coal catastrophe. Knopf Books. Jared will sign copies right out there in the lobby at our Square Books table. We appreciate Square Books being here every week. And by the way, every author we have on this show is booked by Square Books. They read these books and decide this, that, and what they're going to do and who's good and who might be good for the show. And then I have to sit down and read these things. And I got to tell you, man, Square Books, I appreciate them so much. Every week, it's a great book and easy and fun to read. Thank you, Square Books. These guys they're coughing up black jelly. It's just horrible. The air tasted like aluminum foil. Man, I just, I don't have enough cushions on the couch. That's what I'm complaining about. I'm thinking, boy, these people. All right, let's get to John Primer, y'all. You know, you can't paint the blues without the primer. Yeah. John Primer began his career in Mississippi, migrated to Chicago. We know that story. Ended up playing with Junior Wells 7 nights a week for 7 years, ladies and gentlemen. Impressed, Mr. Willie Dixon hired Primer for his Chicago Blues All-Star Band, where Primer met Mr. Muddy Waters. And correct me if I'm wrong, but Muddy Waters taught John Primer how to play slide guitar. That's going right to the source, y'all. Yeah. Blues Hall of Famer, 3 Grammy Award nominations, Lifetime Achievement Awards, and after our show tonight, John and the band will do a full show up at our good buddies and neighbors, Proud Larry's, but we got them down here tonight. Y'all welcome, John Primer and the Real Deal Blues Band. We'll be right back.
Thank you. Just doing all of my original songs. This is a song from my Hard Time CD. You can take some CDs home. I got a few out there on your way out, right? One, two, and... This song called You Got What I Want. On the bay, Steve Bell on Michael and the beat on the drums. I'm John Primer. We'll see y'all over at Larry, Proud Larry, in a few minutes.
One more time, y'all. John Primer, Real Deal Blues Band. Yeah, man. Great sound. They will be playing at Proud Larry's tonight about 8:30, kind of an early start. So let's all just move on up there and hear some John Primer tonight. That was just great. Let's thank all our guests one more time, if you don't mind. Tania Sanders, y'all. Great songwriter, great voice. Tania Sanders. Jared Sullivan, Valley So Low. A great book. Great job he did on it. We'll be visiting with Jared. One more time for John Primer, y'all. And the Real Deal Blues Band. So great. All righty, y'all. Two more shows to go, and we're done for this fall season. So we appreciate y'all coming out. We've got a great one lined up next week and the week after. Also, a programming note, December 6th is a Friday night. We'll be up at Southside Gallery for our annual holiday membership party. Yellow Bushwhackers are going to play some of your seasonal favorites. Yeah, and we're going to have great food, some great drinks, and some good cold beer, and a great time. I believe we're going to have a raffle, so we'll find out what we're going to raffle. I hope it's something really cool, like a golf cart we can drive around town. Isn't that what we need? Y'all got one, right? How does that work? It hadn't killed you yet. All right. Thank y'all for being here. We will see you on the radio. Thank you, boys.
I'm gonna grow and glow till I
should become vain along the way. Oh, I'm just an old chunk of coal, Lord, but I'm gonna be a diamond someday.
Radio Hour's executive director is Lucy Gaines. Our production director is Tim Lee. Our broadcast and post-production engineer is Jeffrey Reed. Our front of house engineer is Blake Gardner.
So bright, I don't know. Oh Lord, I don't know. And ask me who thought of using a candle for a light, I don't know. Oh Lord, I don't know. But ask me, how does a man feel when he's got the blues? And I'd say, Mr. Eulabue, downhearted and blue. And oh,